Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld. Tonight I have a very exciting guest to share with us his experience. His name is Joe Montaldo, and he is the founder of ICAR, which is the International Community for Alien Research. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan. Well, you know, first of all, I want to say it was great meeting you down in D.C. at the X Conference, now that we're all back home again.
That's right.
All that wonderful stuff. And, you know, I had a blast down there interviewing with you, and it's a blast to be on the show.
What I was thinking about the X-Politics Conference, it seems like there is a whole culture or subculture arising out of the UFO phenomena. And I know your website and actually your whole radio station, the Paranormal Network, is dedicated to that. So let's talk about what the aspects of this emerging culture seems to be. How do you see it kind of filtering into mainstream?
Oh, you know, actually, for me, it's already filtering into mainstream because I broadcast on FM out of New Orleans now on 105.3. My own show that I host, UFO Undercover, broadcasts on about 20 AM and FM stations. So as far as I'm concerned, we're already mainstream. And then, of course, you know as well as I do, CNN covered the press conference. But, you know, I was happy to learn. A friend of mine sent me an article from the Washington Post today.
Oh, I talked to that guy. Yeah, what was that like?
They did an excellent article on us. He said there was no people running around in funny hats, everybody with PhDs, or if everybody was this, that, or anything. But he really, really gave us a good interview. And CNN today, I did notice, was kind of laughing and giggling about it, but they're still carrying it, and carrying it pretty good. So we're making progress in the mainstream. It's slow, Alan. I'm not going to lie to you. We are getting there. You know, I remember 10 years ago, getting anything on CNN was just a laugh. You know that as well as I do.
So that's the kind of thing, guys. The more we keep at it, the more we kind of persevere and start to not go away, eventually other people are going to notice that, hey, there really is something going on. Because as we've seen for the last 60 years, UFOs are things that they're not dropping out of the mainstream. They are here to stay, and we're part of that.
Yeah.
So, I do see the Washington Post, right? They did give us good eye. I've talked to that journalist, and he seemed like a really open guy, and that's what we need more open journalists that will just come into the subject of whether UFOs exist or not with an open mind and say, okay, what are the facts? And as we saw this weekend, there seems to be a lot of facts, including retrievals from people, you know, those little, what do they call them, implants. But tell me a little bit about your experience, because I missed your lecture, and I know you've had abduction experiences, and, you know, my experiences with abductions, they seem to be very much in an altered state of consciousness. I know I've been abducted, but I don't have any real conscious recall of what those experiences were like. So tell me a little bit about what happened to you.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things that was going on when I was younger. When I first met my wife and my son was born and all, and he was about 3 years old, we were in a place called Gulf Breeze, Florida. Now, if any of y'all know where that is, that's in the panhandle of Florida near Pensacola. It's nestled between Pensacola and Navarre Beach. And actually, the experience happened on a little beach called Opal Beach, which is about 3 or 4 miles from Eglin Air Force Base. Now, this was a very, very, very weird experience, and it's really not for the faint of heart. My wife and I and my son were just out on the beach. We were enjoying. We were down there with Unsolved Mysteries and a few others doing some investigation work and taking a 10-day vacation, you know, just hanging out there, and it's a beautiful place to be. Well, we walk out on the beach that night. We sit down. We're enjoying ourselves. We start walking along, and I hear my wife saying something about a white light. Well, let me backtrack a minute. First off, I hear her talking about some guys on a pier acting funny. She said, she kept telling me, you see the guys over in the pier, they're acting goofy. I said, baby, they're probably drunk. You know, it's Pensacola, and it's the summertime, and probably college kids or something having a good time. And she said, well, they're acting funny, and I kind of ignored her the first 4 or 5 times. And I looked over, seen a little, what appeared to be a green light bobbing up and down in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting. You know, I was like, what is that? But maybe, you know, I thought somebody maybe broke a glow stick and threw it in the water and was playing.
Right.
You know, so I'm watching this thing glow in the water. All of a sudden, you hear these two guys start screaming, like little teenagers. I mean, screaming. And we were 200 yards down the beach from them, and I could hear them. They were screaming in terror, and they were just running down the pier. Well, about that time, I heard my wife say something about white light, and I looked to my right, and it looked like a door just opened up in the Gulf of Mexico. It's the only way I can describe it. It was like a square beam of light that just opened in the thing. Now, what's funny about this is the guys coming out of here were not aliens. They were dressed in black pants, black shirts, black duck-bill caps, typical, like, DEA outfits, covert
outfits. They were coming out of this white door that opened? They were just
walked. It was like stairs coming up out of the water, and they just came, walked up. They grabbed my wife, they grabbed my son. When they grabbed my son, I kind of lost my mind for a minute. I just lost it, and I started swinging at him, and which was just stupid on my part because I don't know what they hit me with. They hit me with something three or four times in the ribs. And I was in good shape at the time. I mean, I was only out of the service like 4 years, and I was, you know, I had forces training in the service. So, and I was putting up one hell of a fight, but they hit me four or five times. And it might have been a taser or something. I'm not sure what it was. But it kind of just dropped me limp. And they looped an arm on each side of me and kind of drug me off into this thing. Well, I remember kind of groggy, and it looked like a green tunnel, but I can't really be sure because it was kind of groggy. And we get down to this holding area, for lack of a better thing. I see him walk my son into a room. There's a bunch of kids in there. So I wasn't quite as mad then, but I was still mad, but I seen him walk.
But you were conscious the whole time, huh? For this little groggy.
The whole time. Just a little groggy. And they were standing there, and they were talking to me. They were telling me something about, oh, just calm down, it's going to be all right, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And I still hadn't seen any aliens, so I'm thinking, oh, I done something to make the government mad, and this is my payment for it. You know, I didn't really know. So I'm standing there. He says, well, come on, I'll calm you down, and I'll show you your wife. So he walked me down this blue hallway, about 100, 125 feet, something like that, through swinging double doors. Everything here is just terrestrial base. So I'm thinking, all right, cool, no alien. I walk into this room, and there's a silver, it's hard to explain, it's like a silver ring, and comes from the ceiling floor, and attached to this ring all the way around was either 8 or 10 chairs, and they were stainless steel chairs, and they had stirrups connected to the chairs. Well, I'm watching these guys, and there's this redhead. We call him the redheaded doctor. This is Tom. This guy, he always shows up in military cases. He's about 6.5 to 7 foot tall with weird red hair, and everybody thinks he's a hybrid. We don't know for sure what he is. But anyway, he's there, and he's doing these experiments. They were actually removing fetuses. They had implanted some fetuses earlier, and some of them they were removing, some of them they were implanting. So it just depended where they were. Well, about this time, and I'm not even sure why, but about this time, this little gray shows up, and he takes four of the women. One of them was my wife and three of the other women, and he starts walking down the hall. And you can see the military people were physically mad about this, but there was nothing they were going to do about it, but they were definitely mad.
These are U.S. military people, U.S.?
Military is a bad word. Government's a bad word because I got to be honest with you. They have ties to the military. They have ties to the government, but if they're actual military, I don't think so. They're not wearing Air Force or Navy uniforms, or at least none that I've ever seen.
Well, how do you know these were human beings or not some other alien race?
Well, I can only go by what they look like. They didn't look like the Nordics or the tall whites or anything like that. They looked just like you and I did. And judging from the bruise I put on the side of one of them's face, I'm thinking they were human because I kind of palmed him in the side of the face, and you could see my whole hand mark on the side of his face like an
eye.
So I'm pretty sure they were human. I can't rule out they could have been hybrid or something else. I mean, there's no possible way to rule it out 100%. But
anyway, so this little gray comes in and takes some of the women away. And then what happened?
So I'm walking behind him with this other guy, and at the time I thought it was two guys, and I really did. I was walking behind him, and there was one guy who just had his arm looped into mine, and then there was another guy who had his hand on my shoulder, and we're walking behind the women. And anyway, we get to this room, and we're standing in the room, and there's a glass wall about 10 foot tall and about 75 foot long. And it's brick halfway up and then glass the other halfway. It was some kind of waiting room. There was just literally people packed in there like sardines. Mostly men, but I could tell. I couldn't even tell if there was any women. It looked mostly or all men to me.
Why were you going along with their orders, or did they have control of you at this point?
You know, this is what I was getting to, because, I told you one of them had his hand on my shoulder, right?
Yeah.
And I thought at the time he was a human. Well, when I turned around, I kind of reached over my shoulder and grabbed his hand with my hand. I was getting a little aggravated again. I was kind of getting my bearings back. And when I did, I realized this was not a human hand on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to freak really hard. I really did, Alan. I just wanted to get up and start running around in circles. But I turned back and looked, and there's a typical gray, and he's standing, and he said, don't panic. Just calm down. You know what you're here for. He said, we're going to bring you in this room. We're going to run this batch of experiments. We're going to finish with your wife. We're going to return your wife, your son, and your child. And I heard my wife say something. Then I heard her sound like she was in pain, and I, of course, lost my mind again. Well, the next thing I remember, I wake up on a table, kind of still groggy, with a gray and a human standing there. The human's just standing there. It looked like a camcorder. I'm not sure if that's what it was, but it looked like a camcorder. And he's taking video footage of this. The gray is doing his thing. And then all of a sudden, and out of nothing, we're standing on the beach. My wife is standing 100 feet from me, about 150 feet from me. My son's in between us, and I'm on the other end. And we're just, like, standing. Now, at the moment, we didn't remember anything. Okay.
You didn't remember a single thing. Wow.
Now, when they put us back on the beach, and what freaked us out, and this is what got us to start looking into the memory, is the distance between my wife, myself, and my son. You know, he was 2.5, almost 3. There was no way we would have let him get that far between us, that close to the ocean. It just wouldn't have happened.
And right. So how much time was missing?
On that particular... Well, you want to know the truth of the matter?
Yeah.
Okay. Remember I told you we went on vacation for 10 days, right?
Yeah.
That's the 10 days we went on. Out of the 10 days, we had 5 days of gas receipts and hotel receipts.
Uh-huh.
We lost an entire 5 days.
Wow. That's a long abduction. What about the hotel you were staying? Was it people looking for you?
This is the thing. The first hotel, this is really weird. We checked into the hotel where Unsolved Mysteries was, which was the Dune, which is, it's gone now, but it was called the Dune. We spent the night there. We checked into the Blue Horizon the next night, which is a little further down the beach. We spent the night there. Then we checked into another hotel while we were waiting for our hotel on Opal Beach to be finished. So we checked into that one, and then we drove from there to Opal Beach, which is, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. And we got to Opal Beach. We checked in. Well, the night we walked into Opal Beach, the next day we checked out of the hotel. That's another reason we knew something had happened. So they picked us up the first night we were there. They put us back, like I told you, and then the next morning we checked out of the hotel. And we were at the hotel for 5 days. That's how long we paid for this hotel. Now, I didn't think about it at the time. I know everything was really weird, but I was really confused. So we got home. All the way home, we didn't talk. We didn't even say hi to each other the whole entire way home.
You were freaked out. You were probably in some post-traumatic shock, which happens.
And I'm pretty sure that's what it was. We get back to New Orleans. We're talking. We start talking a couple of days later. I'm like, what the hell? So I said, you know what? Let me call the lady at the hotel because she's real nice, real sweet. And I'm talking to her. I said, well, you know, we checked in. She said, yeah. And she said, y'all kind of keep to yourself. No one's seen you. We didn't even show up on their camera for 5 days. She said, no one's seen us until we checked out of the hotel. Which was weird because she said our car never left. It was always parked in the same spot. And if you looked at the videotape, it was parked in the same spot. It never moved.
What year was that? That happened? What year?
Let's see. My son's 23 now, so we're talking 20 years ago. What is that? 89, 90, somewhere right around there.
About 20 years ago. Okay, so that was the first. But how did the memories start to come back to you then?
Well, little things like that. You know, realizing we were missing 5 days got us to looking for stuff. And what happened was, a couple of months had passed. We were talking. And we had gone out one night, and we had gone partying with some friends of ours, and we'd stayed up pretty late. It was 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. We got home, and I had a fairly good buzz going on. My wife, which doesn't drink, had drank like 3 daiquiris, which was a lot for her, trust me, because she doesn't drink at all. So we're sitting there talking, and I said, you know, why don't we try a little hypnosis, see if we can do it. So she tried it on me first, and I remembered a couple of little things, and then I tried it on her, and she remembered it. But it was the little things we were remembering that set us off. And every time we would remember one little thing, 10 big things would come along with it. So after a couple of weeks of doing this, we actually had put back together the night they picked us up. We remembered that night. Now, what I didn't realize until later on the deep regression was that when I told you they had walked us down the hall and they were doing experiments and they had removed my wife and 3 other women, the Graves had actually physically removed us from Eglin and put us on board the ship. Come to find out that whatever was going on that night, the Graves didn't want these women being exposed to. So they actually came and took them from a military abduction and brought them aboard the ship and kept them there for, I guess, 5 days.
Well, we could get into the different types of abduction, but first I'm sort of interested in your history a little more. So then when you started to put things together, did you realize that there were previous abduction experiences before that one? Was that a thing?
I always knew something was weird was going on, but you know, I didn't really realize to what extent until this case. You know, because I had been investigating this for a few years, but and I didn't really even know I was a contactee at the time. I got to be honest with you.
Contact. Now you make a big distinction between contactee and abductee. You're saying contactees, according to your website, have a conscious or the agreement with these aliens, and an abductee doesn't have an agreement, basically. Is that how you define it?
Well, abductees are abductees. I mean, they usually don't know they're being abducted. And even if they do, it's very, 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 very little. But it's basically total and absolutely against their will. There's no working partnership there whatsoever. And there's just no self-awareness. Really, and that's what we use to distinguish abductee and contactee is contactees are self-aware of what's going on. Abductees are not.
So you were a contactee then before that, right? Yeah, what happened?
Well, no, before this experience, I wasn't anything. I was investigating someone else. Actually, I was investigating several other people, but I did not really know. I had an idea, but I didn't really know, okay? I felt like maybe I was, and maybe there was some stuff that definitely pointed to maybe I was, but I was still in denial, I guess is the best way to say it. You know, this is like being an alcoholic or being gay. You're coming out of the closet, basically, is what's going on here. So I was in denial. I was strictly in denial, and I wasn't. After this, there was no more denial for me. There was actually no way for me to deny this anymore. I was sitting there thinking about it.
Yeah. So then did you remember your early childhood? Because most people, I think, who have abducted later on in their adult life, they probably had some childhood abductions, encounters that lead up to this, because they're taking us for a reason. So did you realize? Yeah.
It took a couple of years, but once everything had started going through and I started developing these abduction criteria and stuff and so on and so forth, I actually started recovering a lot of my memories. But I was working with people with regression and active recovery methods and different kind of support groups, I started remembering. And then I was talking to my grandmother one night, and she used to tell me about these invisible friends I had and the invisible friends she had and other people in the family. And I said, you know, and I said something to her about, yeah, they kind of always look great to me, and you could see it startled her, you know, like, oh, well, they always look great to her, too. So at that point, I realized that, you know, this was a family thing, and these were little Graves that were abducting us and had been in my life for as long as I could remember. And still are in my life for as long as I can remember. As far as I know, they're just never going to stop. They're just going to keep on whatever they're doing.
Well, I think they are stopping. I mean, it's true about the generational thing, because I know that my grandmother and mother probably both had abduction experiences. My mother has a very strange fear of cats, and I said, what is it about the cats? And she said, well, it's the eyes. I just can't look at those eyes of a cat.
It's weird you bring that up, because there are things that trigger abductees, like Bud Hopkins or Bud Hopkins' book Intruder or Whitley Strieber's book Communion. The covers sometimes kick people, but it's not just that. Contactees or abductees sometimes have fascination with vampires, almost always have a fascination with the occult and the paranormal, and there's little things in there that will trip their, you know, create them to make them wake up. You know,
what's the connection to vampires?
We don't know. Like fairies. There's a connection to fairies, too. Like 50% of all contactees have an interest in these things. We're not sure why. We think it has more to do with looking for answers. We know one thing for sure. Contactees will all be religious at some point in their life, seeking answers. Then they will move into alternative religions and then into New Age stuff because they're seeking answers and trying to learn how to understand their abilities. Some of these things will help them, but in a way, like the New Age religions and all, kind of hurt contactees because they're really more advanced than most New Ages will ever be.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of pulls them backwards than forward.
Well, I'm into the whole New Age stuff, and I've been a seeker.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, you know...
No, it's a good thing. It's a good thing for...
Well, I know. I don't think it necessarily hurts people. For me, I take all of that, but don't put into any box. I take all the good parts of all these and then make my own thing out of it.
Well, what I mean by it hurts them is, like, a lot of them, they'll start using rituals or different things to try to use their abilities. Because they don't understand. They think their abilities, these are given by a spiritual means or by Gaia or what have you, but they're not. These are inbuilt abilities that you can access at will whenever you want to access them. So when you start using crutches, it limits the ability. That's what I mean.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you on that. And I think what part of the ET experience is that they open us up to the facilities that we already have innately within the brain and our physiology. Because they're using that higher potential, and being in association with these ETs, we start to use our higher potential.
That's a very good point.
And then to mix it up with religion, it does get in the way, because I think religion does kind of take us out of our potential as human beings and makes it into ritual and does these ridiculous things with who we are when, you know, we are far. I do agree with you about that. We are far beyond.
Sedona is a mecca for contactees. They just don't know it because they're. See, that's another thing I consider a hindrance to them, because they get so immersed in some of these new age religions that they don't really understand what they are. But in some ways, it helps them to awake. So it's a good and a bad thing. You know, it's like
awake to what though? What are we awaking to?
Awakening to the fact that they're an alien contactee and they have abilities that nobody else on the planet has. See, contactees possess abilities that other people just don't. Everybody thinks, let me put it this way, everybody thinks that telepathic and empathic abilities everybody on the planet has. That is not true.
Mm.
That is not true. Only contactees and abductees have them. What the problem is people don't realize how many contactees and abductees there are. There's over a billion of them.
A billion? That's one-sixth of the... I mean, but let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, what they're saying is okay, like with us, we have more than 12,000 of them, okay?
When you say us, you mean your organization, ICAR, has 12,000 people have contacted your organization and saying that they are abductees.
Well, no, that's how many meet the criteria. Probably 50,000 have contacted the organization.
Oh, I see.
That's the 12,000 that meet the criteria. The rest of them just don't meet the criteria, so we don't consider them to be real abductees, but... When you do the math right now, and most all researchers in the field agree on this, it's less than 1% that come forward.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. That puts the total at somewhere between 850 million and 1.8 billion. That's where the actual count is. That doesn't mean they're all being abducted at one time or at any one time in their life, but that means there's that many active abductees or contactees on the planet. And you have
that may be true. I don't know. It's pretty amazing if it...
But you understand it more. If you understand that this didn't start 50 years ago, and this started way back 6 to 25,000 years ago, of course, the further you go back, the higher the number goes here. Okay, so if you go back 6,000 years, and you listen to what the Sumerians, the Egyptians, and the Dogon say, more than half of their populations were messed with. Okay, more than half, which would translate in today almost into half the existing population on the planet. So we're actually being conservative when we say a billion. Now, if you go back 25,000 years and say they started messing around with us, that would put it at more like 3/4. If you go back 100,000 or 200,000, that means almost everybody on the planet is. So it
Where do you think?
You start. Go ahead.
No, because let's see how many, and then we'll talk about the reason why this is all happening, which I think is the most important question.
Yeah,
but,
and that's a good one to talk about. If you look at the Egyptians, and you know how the Egyptian pharaohs were described, they sound like little gray hybrids, listen to people describe.
Mm-hmm.
And you also look at the different temples with the flying saucers and the gray spaces and all on them, and the Dogon talk about I forgot his name now, Nibiru or whatever his name was, that came in and landed a spaceship in the water.
Oh, right,
and came out
right.
And life. And then the Sumerians, you talk about the human aliens that created us and the reptilians that are breeding with us. If those stories, because the creation story of the humans and the reptilians is in every ancient culture in the world, if that is true, then yes, at least half the people on this planet are abductees and contactees. But I still think it's less than a third or less than a quarter. I think it's about 20.
Okay, so if you talk to David Jacobs, he says that the modern phenomenon began in the 1890s, roughly, according to his research. Now, I guess you don't agree with that.
Well, no, because the Sumerians, you got to remember, the Sumerians get into great detail about the great white dome cities that the people couldn't leave because they couldn't breathe our air. The reptilians that used to come in and rape the created women that created the new species that lives here today, they talk about this in depth. The Christian Bible talked about this 3,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago when Eve ate the apple and became self-aware because the serpent gave it to her. I mean, the Mayans talk about this 3,000 years ago. The Dogon talk about it 5,000 years ago. The Sumerians talk about it 6,000. So we know that it's at least 6,000 years old.
But maybe that was those were different races of aliens. I'm just
no, they just brought them the same way.
You think they're great and they're got, okay? Because why then do you think this is happening? Are we just a kind of resource for their genetic manipulations? I mean, that's what I think is happening. I think they're extracting human DNA in order to create a hybrid alien race. I mean, that's what I've been able to put together from my experiences.
Recently I was giving some new data that I wasn't expecting, by the way, by some very prominent scientists. Richard Keku was one of them. There's a new theory that Earth, or our solar system, and the seven or eight solar systems near us, are not native to this galaxy. About 1.2 billion years ago, there was a galaxy that brushed up against ours. And everybody agrees that it deposited solar systems from that galaxy into this one. They think this solar system we live in was one of the ones that were deposited. Something about the materials inside our system doesn't quite match everything else in the galaxy. But they're pretty sure that this solar system was deposited here by another galaxy. Now, everybody knows in a billion years, we're going to do this again. We're going to slam into Andromeda and deposit materials from both galaxies into each other in a billion years from now. So the point of this is if the Greys, the reptilians, and humans are native to this galaxy, and they found this planet with whatever life was on it a billion years ago, just the simple fact that it's not from this galaxy is enough to want to study everything on the planet. You know, because it's not, I mean, because I doubt they can travel across galactic space, so more than likely, they're very, very interested in whatever was here.
Yeah, but why are they doing these, I mean, according to you, thousands of years and implanting fetuses and, I mean, it seems like they're really studying humans. I mean, there's something that I don't quite get about that. It seems like they're very much interested in our genetics.
That's what I was going to tell you.
Yeah.
If the Sumerian text is correct, and the people who built the Great White Dome cities came here that couldn't breathe. Okay, I'll give you a quick story because I know we're going to get run out of time if I don't. But they said they built these Great White cities. Now, these aliens that came could not breathe this planet. So they created a species just like themselves, but could breathe the atmosphere to live here and mine resources and stuff like that. Now, somewhere they say about 1,000 years into this that they decided that, wait, what the hell? We're just like them. We're gods. We shouldn't be mining the planet. So in turn, the Sumerians say, and along with several other races, they created the seven creations of man. The last creation of man was a rough blueprint of what we are today. They could plow the fields. They could procreate. They could eat. They could sleep. But they didn't ask why. They weren't really self-aware, which is key because all the ancient stories talk about, you know, not being self-aware. They really weren't a self-aware species. The Sumerians, along with the Dogon and the Egyptians, say the reptilians came in, started raping their women. The children were born more different. And the key was that they were self-aware. They actually overthrew the Sumerian overlords and took back their territory. That's why the aliens left for a while. There was thousands of them, so they just took it back. The Egyptians talk about this. The Dogon talk about this. Now, here you have a whole new species created from two very high species to start off with. The reptilian humans are both, you know, high evolved species that created a whole new species. So in comes the Greys. The Greys are like, holy cow, there's a whole new species on this planet. Let's check it out. Mm-hmm. Now, there is some argument that Greys have actually introduced their DNA to ours, too. If that's true, we are probably the most unique species in this entire galaxy, meaning that we have three of the highest order races built into us. Mm-hmm. So they're going to keep a close eye on us. And the hybrid program might be forced evolution to see where this is going to be 10,000 years from now or 100,000 years from now, because they may actually be worried in a million years they can't control us. You know, they gave us so many of their abilities. We're young right now. We really can't. We haven't developed them, but we're learning to develop them. And each time, and each generation, those abilities get a little better, a little stronger, and a little better, a little stronger, and it keeps moving forward. So eventually, our abilities will be at least as good as the reptilians and the humans. If they ever get as good as the Greys, the reptilian humans just became our slaves. So, you know, they have a vested interest in keeping a very good eye on us, and maybe even slowing our evolution down. But this is the kicker. 6,000 years ago, if they started abducting people, it would have been easy to wipe us all out. Now, let's be honest about it, Alan. We were throwing spears at each other. So UFO could have came over and blasted.
We're still throwing spears at each other.
Well, you've got a good point there.
Yeah,
they've just got nuclear tips on them now. But but they're still the same thing. But, you know, back then, there was 50, 60 million people. They could have easily wiped us all out. Wouldn't even been a big deal. But in the same breath, if they wanted to enlighten this species, they could have easily done that. Even if they started even 100 years ago, they could have easily enlightened or wiped our species out. But the simple fact that they've done neither one tells you that this agenda is not so much about us as it is about them. And
how do you get that? How do you get it's about them?
Because you judge them by their actions. And their actions suggest that, you know, if they were here to help us, that we would be a much more enlightened species than we are today, whether it was 6,000 years ago or 100 years ago.
But we are evolving. But we are.
But we're not enlightened. We're not any more enlightened today than we were 6,000 years ago. We're just as vicious, just as angry, just as mean, just as destructive.
I think we're a little more together. I think, you know, at least we're having a planetary civilization. At least we're connecting to each other. I mean, there's still some primitive people making war, but I think we are more compassionate, and we are seem to be joining into a global community with the internet, with high technologies.
But see,
you know,
the Koreans were just blowing nuclear missiles over our heads just 3 days ago. So I can agree with that because they're testing nukes over our heads. So
well, my hope is that we're evolving, and it does seem like so you're saying
we are
that
evolving. I'm not arguing the point that we're evolving, but we're not enlightened. Let me put it this way. If we had been enlightened 6,000 years ago, we would be so far more enlightened than we are today that it's not even funny. We would be a spiritually solid race, would be probably a one government planet, probably a one religious planet by now. But we're none of those. We're still fractioned. We're still fighting amongst ourselves. Now, we're not killing as many people as we were before, and we're not starving as many people as before, but we're not saving any more people than we were before either. So we're really having... Technologically, we've made strides. Mentally, most people agree with this. We haven't made much more strides than the guy who lived in Egypt 6,000 years ago. Matter of fact, in some of their art, in some of their language, and even in some of their writing, they're more advanced than we are today. All you have to do is look at Mozart. You don't see no Mozarts around today. Or any of the great literature. You just don't see that today. So it could be argued that we've already reached our pinnacle and have started going backwards. It's a tough one, but we don't know at this point. But
so your thing is that the Greys are here to get something from us.
Well, they are here to get something from us, but I think they're also babysitting the reptilians and the humans.
You think so? They're babysitting us. Babysitting us for what? What reason?
Babysitting them to keep them from getting in. They hate each other. All the ancient texts says, every contact you've ever talked to says that the reptilian humans hate each other.
The reptilians and the humans hate each other?
Yeah, the human animals.
When you say humans, you mean the Planet X people, the Nimeru, the gods?
No, I don't think, I think Planet X is bogus, but...
No, but who are the humans? Us, you mean?
No, just aliens. They're just aliens. I guess you could call them the Rebrews, or you could call them Nordex, you could call them whatever, but...
But some people say they exist in this... You can see within the same abduction... Aliens, Greys, and Nordics. People have claimed to have seen all three in some of that.
Yeah,
you've heard
they
that,
have,
right?
And they always tell you the same thing, that the human aliens and the reptilian aliens will always give way to the Greys. If the Greys are present, everybody gets out of their way. Especially if, like, the 7-foot Greys are around, they say the humans and reptilians will even bow their head to them in respect.
Really? Because some people have claimed that the reptilians are the ones that are in control, and then other people, I interviewed the Pickering brothers, Clay and Sean Pickering.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about those guys?
They sound really familiar. But
they have a government informant who's leaking disclosure. But anyway, they say there's a whole nother race that's way beyond them called the Conformers, which are a silicon-based race that looks sort of like those... beings in the abyss, you know, those light glowing beings?
Yeah, they're probably getting confused with the light beings or the energy beings is what most contactees call them. They're pure matter, and they say they created the grays. The grays were created to be the galaxy's policemen. They're the guys that sit at the head of the council. They're the guys that make sure everybody's behaving. They said before the light beings came here, how many of a billions of years ago it was, that our galaxy was in complete chaos and at war all the time. And the light beings came into the scene, and they said, you know what, enough's enough. They created the grays, which is a superior race to everybody else, to be the galaxy's policemen, just like the U.S. is the policeman of the world. It's the same basic idea. They're just babysitting, making sure everybody's behaving.
But they seem so robotic, the grays. And you know, in one of my abductions...
Only the three-foot ones, though. Only the three-foot ones.
You know who I met, I think, in my abduction, is the master geneticist behind the grays, which is the ancient female one. Do you ever hear anybody talk about that?
The problem with the ancient, like that, because the light beings are ancient, are an ancient race. The problem with the light beings is they can manifest any form. So it's hard to know when somebody says that if they're talking about the light beings or a whole new species. More than likely, when they talk about the ancient ones, they're talking about the light beings. But you know, they can. They don't need ships to travel time and space. They don't. They can take any physical form that they want at any time that they want. So it's hard to really put anything on them other than the, you know. And in most people's minds, the only way you can describe them is as gods, because they're so far.
But these light beings are good. They're good. They're here for our upliftment. So they are here for us.
To destroy us.
So if they made the grays, then aren't they the overlords of the universe that are here to uplift humanity, to make us better?
Well, they're like the overseers. They sit at the council, too, along with several other races. I think there's 14 races altogether. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it is they don't necessarily, they're not going to let anybody start a war, but they don't really interfere per se. They want us to develop on our own. Like if we get into it, the Russians or the Japanese tomorrow, or Chinese tomorrow with nukes, they're not going to intervene. They're going to let us nuke each other, because they look at it like this: they want to see what evolves out of that and what kind of race we become after that. You know, it's kind of like watching us and learning all at the same time. You know, so they have a vested interest in us, and they would like us to be successful, and they would like us to become a part of their community, but they're not going to go against nature and the way the universe works. And if the universe thinks we need to be destroyed, they are not going to stop it.
Well, what do you think the highest human destiny is? What would you see at this point for a human?
Well, if what I understand about the human brain is correct, probably in a billion and a half years, give or take a day or two, we will probably supersede any race with the exception of the light beings. We will probably exceed all of them. And I think that is the real reason they have a vested interest in watching us. I don't think it's anything more than that. I think they know sometime in our future that we will surpass even the grays. And by knowing that, it makes us very, very dangerous. Because if we still have the state of mind we do today and we surpass these races, we're going to conquer them. Because that's what we do by nature. We conquer stuff. So
you think when we open up to that part, there'll still be a kind of conquering part of us?
I'm hoping not. But then, you know, it's hard to say with humans, because I know some really, really, really good people. I mean some really kind, good people that would do anything for anybody. But in the same breath, I know people that would soon spit on you and shoot you at the same moment. So, you know, I'm kind of disturbed. And I've never seen that change in the whole time I've been alive. And all through history, it's still the same way. You have really good and really bad, and it doesn't seem to ever go away. So we can hope a billion years from now that it changes, but we could just as easily go dark side as we go light side. That's the problem I see here.
Yeah, but I think my belief is when we open up our brains to these higher potentials, there is a compassionate part of us that comes forward, because we also see ourselves in another human being. You know, the ones, people that are more evolved, see each other. You're me over there. And so I think that goes
hand in
hand.
I'm hoping you're right here, because I'm hoping that we grow and expand and become a very loving and peaceful race. And I mean, I want us to be an intelligent and strong race in case there's any mean people out there, but at the same stroke, I would like to see, and we do have the potential for that.
Yeah.
We have the potential of probably becoming a magnificent race with abilities we can't even dream of today.
Mm-hmm.
But
right. But let me ask you then, what's your intention behind forming this international community of abduction research, alien research?
methods to collect as much comparison data as we can. See, when you hear me talking, I'm not talking about my own cases, and I'm not talking about any one case, and I'm not doing like David Jacob talking about 10 or 15 cases. When I'm giving you data, I'm giving you data based on a comparison study over 12,000 cases. It puts us in a very unique place, and it puts us in a very unique understanding of what's going on. And, you know, I tell this to people all the time. I say, guys, we're not talking like normal ufologists do. We have way more data than they do. And then to top it all off, we have our caseload, okay? But we have David Jacobs stuff. We have Bud Hopkins stuff, Whitley Strieber's, Mary Rodwell's, Yvonne Smith's. All of that has been incorporated along with our data. Daryl Sims, everybody's data has been incorporated. We use that as a base study. So you have all of that plus what we're doing. So it puts us in a really unique understanding about it. It's like the reptilians. Everybody thinks the reptilians are from the Draco star system. They're not. They're from Earth.
They're from Earth, the reptilians? Where are they?
They originally evolved on this planet some, what, 6 billion years ago? About 300-400 billion years ago, they evolved on this planet. And what's interesting about that, and this is really important for anybody listening tonight, humans have an internal clock. You know what the internal clock is set at?
No.
24 and a quarter hours. You know what the planet's clock is set at? 23 and three quarters hours. So why would that be? If we were native to this planet, our internal clock would be the same as the internal clock on this planet, and it's not. Then
Let me take that in. You say humans have a 44 and a quarter
20,
hour
24.
Internal cycle. Like we
had 24 and a quarter hours is what our clock is set on. In our head, our clock is set on 24. It's based on 24 and a quarter hours.
Who figured this out? I mean, how do we know that?
Well, there was a study done. Actually, there was a couple of studies done. And what they do is they time you. And they give you a time, okay, and they start from a time. Okay, it's 7 o'clock. Now, you're going to start your clock at 7 o'clock, and we're going to go. Well, after a couple of days, they noticed these people were getting like 2 minutes later, 3 minutes later, 5 minutes later, 15 minutes later.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it stayed. It stopped at 15 minutes later. It stopped at 30 minutes later. It went to 20 minutes, stopped in 30 minutes later.
So it keeps
Everybody progressed to 30 minutes later, which meant their clock was set at 24 and a quarter hours, not 23 and three quarters hours. Scientists find it fascinating. They don't know why, and the only current theory is, as there's another thing to this. It's either 66 or 77 degrees. I forgot which one it was. That is the optimal body temperature for humans to work in. Unfortunately, the planet we live on is, I think it's 86 or 84 degrees is the optimal temperature on this planet. So, but get this. On Mars, 55 million years ago, the time on Mars is 24 and a quarter hours, and the average temperature would have been around 70 degrees.
So you think we evolved on Mars first as a human race?
I don't know if we did or if we didn't, but there are some real hardcore science data out there now that's suggesting that we're not native to this planet. And they're pretty sure now that when 63 million years ago, when our planet went into this disaster, they're pretty sure that Mars and Venus also were having problems at the same time. They're pretty sure that's when that meteor slammed into Mars, the same time it slammed into Earth, it slammed into Venus. They think the asteroid belt between Mars and Earth, between Mars and Jupiter, was destroyed 63 million years ago. It was fire.
Whatever that planet was, that planet was split apart.
That might have been the Nebu. You know that, right? That might have been the Nebu. Because
when that planet split apart, it threw stuff into Mars, Venus, and Earth, you say?
Earth, yeah. And then the reptilians left Earth because, you know, the planet was a disaster and they couldn't live here anymore. Mm-hmm. Whatever was on Mars probably escaped over here after a little while.
Or went inside,
could have just went inside. It's a good point, too.
Yeah.
Because you hear all the time about underground.
I think the Earth as a whole civilization we will contact at some point in our history.
But what's truly important about the reptilians is they're not reptilians. They're amphibians. They have webbed hands, webbed feet, and gills. They can breathe in the water and out the water. They have actually developed to use this planet. We have it. If we were truly native to Earth and we had evolved here over 63 million years, we would have gills because three-quarters of this planet is water. And if you're going to be the dominant species on this planet, you're going to use both the land and the water. On Mars, only about 20% of it was water. So the dominant part would have been a mostly land, so you wouldn't have evolved to live in the water. But here...
I'm following. But you're saying the reptilians or amphibians, let's call them,
yeah,
they evolved here, but then they built their own spaceships and they took off to other places? What happened to
either
them?
Either they left or they went underground, like you said. They did one or the other. Now, I think they left because, like, Angkor Wat and all of them say that they went to the Draconian star system, and Angkor Wat lines up with Draconian at 12,500 years ago. Matter of fact, all of the ancient monuments line up with some constellation at 12,500 years ago. That's really weird. I don't know what that means either.
12,500 years ago? Well, they say that the Earth was tilted in a certain direction, and then it keeps shifting on its axis. I mean, I don't know if I believe that, but why not?
Well, we know that there was something that happened because all these monuments were built to a date prior to when they were built. You know, like the Sphinx only lines up with Leo at 12,500 years ago. The Great Pyramids only line up with Orion at 12,500 years ago. Easter Island only lines up with the Pleiades at 12,500 years ago. So this is a significant date in our history because all these monuments line up at that date, but nobody knows what happened.
Well, now, I think there was a shift, don't you? Yeah.
Well, you know, they found that city off the coast of Cuba that's 10,000-something years old. It was probably around when this happened, and that might have been while it's gone now, you know, why it got buried under the ocean, but that's the thing. None of us were there. You weren't there. I weren't there. People were there, but nobody.
But these artifacts left then, it's like a puzzle we're trying
memory.
To piece together. And so.
And
so,
either the
aliens
or genetic memory made us build those monuments to that time frame. Now, it could be something else, Alan. Have you ever met Dr. Paul Levitt?
No. Paul Levitt?
No, Levitt. It's L-A-V-I.
Oh, no, I've heard of him.
I always chop his last name up. He's going to slap me one day for doing
no, it's
knowledge.
Okay, but I have heard of this guy. I have. What did
well,
he say?
They prove that every 26,000 years there's a cosmic pulse that comes from the core of the galaxy. They found in the Earth's soil. And as it approaches, you see it's a big blue star. This is actually written in places in history about this big
blue
star.
Oh, yeah, the Hopi prophecy talks about a big blue star.
Yeah, what happens is as it gets closer to the Earth, now, you know, it takes 26,000 years to get here. As it gets closer to the Earth, you see the blue star. Then all of a sudden, the gas starts to fill our solar system and choke out our sun and create global warming. I mean, the ice age. But after a little while, the radiation comes with it. And, of course, it melts all the ice, triggers massive heating and stuff on the planet, and kills a lot of people on the planet. And they've proved that this happens every 26,000 years. So 12,500 years ago might have been the last cycle. That was the end of the last ice age. And they always wondered what kicked off, made the last ice age end. So, you know, we have a date at this time, monuments built to it. We have the end of the ice age. It might have been the final part of that event. But
okay, so
we don't know, Alan.
Well, we'll see, but I mean, just like as we kind of wrap up here, what I get from all this, and not just the alien research, is the whole spiritual, what you might call New Age movement, is about evolving our consciousness, and it does seem some of us are opening up to this empathic ability, to this higher intelligence, to this global civilization. Things seem to be changing. Look at Obama, you know, that represents a real significant change in the consciousness of this country, at least. So it seems like
he's the Antichrist.
Obama's the Antichrist?
You know, he meets more criteria for the Antichrist than any president.
What do you mean? I thought he was a good guy.
He's fell down below 50% in the polls in the country now. He's having a hard time, but... And the thing of it is, like Richard Dolan said, he's Bushite. That's all he is. He promised to end the war. All he did was extend the war. He promised not to give money to the Middle East. He gave him $5 billion. Every promise he made, he's broken. So.
What, you don't think that humans are evolving to a higher consciousness?
I think some humans are evolving to a higher consciousness. I do not think all 6 billion of us. I don't even think more than a billion of us are.
So you don't think 20... I mean, I keep pushing 2012 as this big... departure point where we will finally come into our own as a responsible planetary civilization. I mean, what do you get about 2012?
Well, you know, I'm up in the air on 2012. Sometimes I want to agree with what you just said. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm thinking, oh, we're all just, you know what. And sometimes I'm thinking it might be a mix and conglomerate. And then sometimes I think nothing's going to happen. So I get fickled on 2012. I'm not even going to lie to you. I go back and forth because I got a bunch of friends that I know from South America. They introduced me to some Mayans, and the Mayans always tell me the same thing. They said, Joe, it's simple. This is what it means. It means the end of life as you know it and the start of the Golden Age. He said, what would trigger the end of life as you know it without destroying the planet or anybody else and kick off the Golden Age? The only thing I could think would do that would be full disclosure of the extraterrestrials.
Well, I think that's I totally agree with you, but I also think it's opening up this facility of the brain, this creative potential that each of us has. And I think, you know, the Aquarian age or this golden age is about different frequencies coming from extraterrestrial sources like the center of the galaxy that stimulate the kind of aptitude that humans have. I mean, we're, you know, being bombarded all the time, and some of these cosmic waves do open up our potential for a higher consciousness. So I think we're moving into an Aquarian.
I think some of us will. But I tell you what I'm going to do, because I know you're getting short on time. I'm going to get you scheduled in May, or June, May or June, and I'm going to get you on the show, and we're going to continue this conversation.
Okay.
Because it there's so much here, and there's so many ways you can go. And then there's the map of the Creator, the Pravada map that dates back 120 million years.
Well, I'd love to talk about that sometime. I mean, my shows tend to be pretty uplifting and positive, and I think, you know.
You're a great host. I enjoyed it, and I'm having a ball.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Let's push us. Let's, like, plug a couple of things that you're working on. So mention some of the radio shows and your organization.
Okay. Guys, y'all can always find me at UFOUndercover.com. Now, I host a show on Wednesday night on the Paranormal Radio Network, which I said www.paranormalradionetwork.com. You can find my show listed there, 7 to 9 on Wednesday night Central Time. Also, the International Community for Alien Research, which is www.icar1.com. Actually, they're getting ready to revamp the site, so if y'all would check it out now, and then check it out again in a couple of weeks, because they're in the middle of getting ready to do a complete makeover of the site, because it's been getting entirely too much traffic. But if you're an alien contactee and you would like to talk to one of our many, many investigators or any of our researchers or, for that matter, any of our regressionists or therapist people, there's a place in there where you can submit a form. It's private. Now, everybody thinks it's not secure, but it is secure. It's a secure web page. It'll come straight to me. It doesn't go to anybody else. It doesn't even go to any of the other directorships. I will review it, and then depending on where you're located, it will go to the appropriate director, and they will contact you. And hopefully they can help you, because we do have online support groups, and we have local support groups. I mean, I got to be honest. Y'all hear me talking about a lot of stuff with Alan tonight, but in the end, there's two things ICAR is after. We're after information so we can really understand the agenda, and we probably have quite a few more pieces than most people do. But first and foremost, we are here to help people. Whether it's spiritually, physically, mentally, that is what our jobs are, and we have our
whole. Well, thank you, Joe.
Really,
you're doing a great job. The website, actually, I know you're revamping it, but it actually looks very good, very together. Thanks for being a guest on New Realities, and this show will be archived on newrealities.com, but also on bbsradio.com. I take all those shows and also put them on my website just so we get, like, a whole overview. So I'd love to work with you guys, and, you know, BBS is such a great station as well.
Yeah, they do great work.
I know we can, like, work something out. So I'll be in touch. Yeah, let me know when you want to do some, like, cross-pollination there.
I will. I'll get Linda to get you probably in June, because I think they got exopolitics all of May or something, so.
All right. I mean,
I know you don't want to get into politics. So.
No. Politics is okay. It's just, like, nothing ever changes with politics. That's the problem.
I agree with that
100%. So, let's be in touch. I'm going to end with the song Night Before the Future that was written by Duke Williams. You know who Duke Williams is? He was an abductee that started to make rock and roll music.
Oh, Lord. Is he still alive?
I think he's around. I haven't talked to him in a while.
Tell him, send me some music. Cause matter of fact, when I was at X-Conference, I had quite a few people give me some CDs for music. I can't wait to hear it. I haven't had a chance to listen yet, but it's going to be good. But thanks, Alan, for having me on.
Thank you. This is Alan Steinfeld for New Realities, and if you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net, and check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening.